Support for podcasting on KBIA comes from Grindstone Fitness Studio, a full-service gym offering equipment for traditional exercise like weight and cardiovascular training, as well as specialized classes. Choices include personal training, spinning, yoga, Pilates, and more. All classes taught by certified professionals. More information is available at 443-4447, Grindstone Fitness Studio, 3005 Chinaberry Drive in Columbia.
Hello and welcome to Under the Microscope, KBIA's weekly look into stories in science, health, and technology. I'm Raymond Tungekar. On today's show, we'll hear from one MU researcher about the risk factors for alcoholism. But first, more than half of cancer cases in the U.S. could be prevented. That's according to a new article published recently by researchers at the Siteman Cancer Center and Washington University. St. Louis Public Radio's Veronique LaCapra spoke with lead author Dr. Graham Kolditz about what we know about cancer and why more isn't being done to prevent it.
What are the most common causes of cancer in the United States, and which one of those are preventable?
We've listed out the predominant causes of cancer, the preventable causes. Smoking, tobacco, cigarettes clearly causes about a third of all cancers in the United States and really is growing in that direction around the world. Obesity, lack of physical activity, alcohol all come in with diet as the next sequence of factors in the way we live, and then viruses and excess sun exposure. In terms of the key things that are really outstanding in Missouri, tobacco probably is one of our really classic examples. We know in the U.S., Kentucky has the highest lung cancer mortality, Utah has the lowest lung cancer mortality, and Missouri has the lowest tobacco tax and one of the highest lung cancer mortality rates. Illinois, just across the river, has a lot more tobacco control than we have and have substantially lower lung cancer rates. So there's a really clear relation between how much state is focused on tobacco control, how that is reflected in the proportion of the population smoking, and how many people are dying from lung cancer.
A lot of the prevention measures that you're talking about are sort of behavioral changes. I know in your paper you also talk about some of the socioeconomic factors that can contribute to cancer risk. Can you talk a little bit about that and how those factors might affect cancer rates in St. Louis and the rest of Missouri?
Sure. And we clearly have a high proportion of the population living in low-income poverty, not just in the city, but the state as a whole compared to the nation as a whole. And we can look at this as limiting access to services. So if we say screening for breast and colon cancer reduces mortality, but we don't have a system in place for everyone to access those prevention strategies, we're in trouble. Healthy diet, physical activity. If our neighborhoods aren't safe, we're not going to be out walking to the supermarket.
At the end of your article, you pose a question, and that's who's responsible for applying what we know about cancer prevention, right? So what's the answer? Is it the individual? Is it medical or other institutions? Is it the government?
Well, I think we actually are all responsible. It's not at one level on its own. It's the multiple levels, local, state, national, government, healthcare system, and individual all have to come together if we're really going to get the return on investment and prevent half or more of all cancer.
April 5th is National Alcohol Screening Day. Throughout the day, hospitals, clinics, and colleges across the nation will offer free anonymous testing for alcoholism. Ken Schur is a professor in MU's Department of Psychology. He studies alcoholism, and he talked to me about the risk factors, beginning with the symptoms of abuse.
One is tolerance, that is acquired changes in how sensitive you are to alcohol. The other with withdrawal, a characteristic pattern of aversive symptoms that you have when you cut down or you stop. The other is so-called loss of control. That is, either take alcohol in larger amounts than you intended, or drink longer than you had intended. Then there's inability to cut down. There's also you spend too much time doing it, that you wind up giving up important activities because of it, and that it takes a long time to get over its effects, and that you're using it despite the fact that you know it's damaging you in some way, either physically or mentally.
What groups are at risk for developing this dependency?
Probably the strongest risk factor is a history of undercontrolled impulsive behaviors. Kids who had conduct problems, got into a lot of trouble at school, basically people who break the rules a lot. It's also related to a family history of alcohol dependence, and that we know that the offspring of alcoholic parents have a much higher, you know, as high as fivefold increase of becoming alcohol dependent themselves. And then there's, you know, factors associated with culture, there's occupational factors, but I would say if you say, what are the big ones? Being a man, having a history of conduct problems, and having a biological history of alcohol dependence in your family, I would say those are the three big ones. So, I would add another one, even though it's not typically thought that way, is if you're a cigarette smoker. Cigarette smokers tend to be much higher risk for dependence.
Why is that? Is it just because they have addictive personalities?
It's an interesting question. It's something that is probably has multiple explanations. I think one is, particularly nowadays, you could do both in the same place. It used to be that people would smoke all the time, and so it didn't really have much association with anything. Often now, when you do have drinking and smoking, it's in the same kind of locales. I think that's part of it. Part of it is underlying motivation, as you're kind of getting at, and that people who are more impulsive and are more sensation-seeking tend to smoke and they tend to drink. There's another piece that's more biological in terms of cross-tolerance. That is, if you smoke, you're able to have less effects of alcohol in some ways. That is, you could drink more. But interestingly, you also get some other kinds of effects that look more synergistic. So if you ask people, how buzzed do you feel? If you had a drink and a cigarette, you're going to report feeling more buzzed.
For those that suspect that they might have some kind of alcohol use disorder, what would you recommend for them?
If you have one, or at least you have some of these symptoms that we had talked about, a good place to talk, say if you're a student on campus, would be at Student Health Services, the Counseling Center, or the Wellness Resource Center on campus. I think primary care physicians are very tuned into this, and if you don't feel comfortable going to some of those other settings, those would be good places. There are also various kinds of self-help groups like AA, but I think most people would not find that to be a natural first step. And in fact, I think often talking to your physician first is a good first step.
That's it for this week's Under the Microscope. Thanks for listening. To listen to this episode and others, just head to our website, kbia.org.